days?
Yeah,
I've had it a long time.
Chapter 8, verse 7. Everything up to verse 7 is essentially giving back the property to the woman from Shunem who lost all her property when she went to live in Plishti territory. Again, I always say another one of those proofs that we never controlled Plishti territory. I'm not being political here, but it's simply a fact that as you read through Tanakh, Aza was never, ever in Jewish control, not in David's time. David had it. It was subservient to David during David's time, but it was never, these were never Jewish cities. I don't know why.
Was Gerar identified with Aza?
Gerar, Aza, what was the name of the place that you said?
My understanding was
Gerar. Gerar, Aza, Ekron, Ashkelon actually also. These were always non-Jewish cities, and you can see here it's a non-Jewish city as well. This was the Plishtim were by and large wiped out by David, but then somebody else took over that property. I don't know why the Jews never took it. Perhaps because it's a difficult property to control, and it's on a profit loss scale. There's a lot of loss with very little profit. Sand just doesn't grow all that much stuff. It's nice beaches.
It does now.
But what's that?
Well,
the hothouses, but even that was, you know, you have to use modern technology to get it to come out with anything. By and large, it's a big pot of sand. So I think that it wasn't always worth it. Strategically, it was nice from a shipping standpoint, but if you had Tel Aviv Yafo, if you had Haifa, so what do you care? You got a port to the Met, for whatever reason it was, no Jewish Tanakh nation ever managed to conquer it. Not during the First Commonwealth, and not during the Second Commonwealth. Second Commonwealth, it was strongly under Ptolemaic rule, and these were never Jewish towns. Even Caesarea, obviously, was not a Jewish town, so it was much further up the coast. Anyway, enough politics. Vayavo Elisha Damesek. This is a very sad story. So he comes to Damascus. Now, it tells you a little bit about the relationship. Now, if you remember, the last time we saw him involved with Damesek was when Naaman, who had leprosy, went over to speak to Ish Elohim, went over to speak to Elisha. They heard about this Elisha guy. He's a hot prophet. And you have this kind of, it's always hard to say, you know, how could, if they're at war, how is it possible he could just walk into Damascus? It's one of those love-hate relationships. It's like one of those brother, you know, family relationships that, you know, can be both good and bad at the same time. I was just reading a terrible article, not terrible in that it was poorly written, but terrible in that it was frightening, all about the Bedouins and the genetic defects that they have. Really, I mean, horrible. I have to say, I was eating lunch while I opened up, you know, the New York Times to read it, and I put down my lunch. It was, you know, things I never heard of, people born without eyes and all kinds of horrific things. And it was really, you know, horrific. But what was the story? The story was there's this guy who's running a genetic research place in Be'er Sheva, and who's working for him? The second guy in charge is Bedouin. The third guy is a Palestinian from Aza, who is also a geneticist or scientist of some sort, working together. How is that possible? It's possible, you know. The truth is, anybody who lived in it, you know, it was always my criticism against the left wing in Israel, because the truth is the left wing really doesn't know Arabs so well. Who knows the Arabs? The people living in the West Bank. When I was living in the West Bank, we used to stop off in Beit Lechem and used to buy food and talk with the Arabs, and you live amongst them, so you get to know them. So it's kind of, I guess it's paradoxical that people who tend to be enemies also, in this sense, you know who your brother / enemy is, and there are a certain amount of positive relationships as well. They don't make the newspapers, of course, usually, except occasionally. But they're here, so people recognized Elisha, and whether there was a state of war or not, Elisha walked to Damascus, and people accepted his being there because he was a guy with stature. This is, you know, it's real politics. It's not black and white. You know, sometimes you read Tanakh, and it's all very fundamentalist, and they're good guys, and they're bad guys, and, you know, it's very clear. The world around us is not clear, and the world of Tanakh isn't clear either, even though, okay, since Tanakh is trying to make a point, it presents itself as black and white, but you have to pay attention to the grays that you have to read between the lines, or sometimes these lines, to recognize the grays. So Ben-Hadad was sick. Right, you would normally think it was no big deal. But what's it? See, Vayugad lo le'mor ba'ish Elohim anhena. So the man of God, yeah, we see that Ish Elohim is used really during Ben-Hadad's time rather than at later times. It's used by Naaman and his fellows. This gets to do with the chronology of the vignettes. As I mentioned before, the vignettes are not in chronological order. They're in thematic order. So there are these little hints at when it took place. But here we have Ben-Hadad, so we know it was early in the rule, and we know that Ahab's children were on the throne. Vayomer HaMelech El Chazael. So the king says to Chazael, Kach biyadcha mincha, take an offering, a gift, v'lech likrat yish Elohim, v'darashta et Adonai me'oto me'mor ha'achiyem icholi zeh. Ask God, you cave up, okay, whether I'm going to live. Now what's interesting is this is sort of the opposite of Ahaziah, the son of Ahab. He got sick and he went to Baal. Here you have Syria going to God. It's a step, again, here's a step in the right direction. You're getting a situation where, okay, if they're not monotheists, at least they recognize the authority of this man. My guess, this is after Naaman's time. If you remember, I hinted last time that Naaman had actually decided to convert to Judaism, and not well, even though he wasn't mentioned in the last chapter by name, but I'm pretty sure that was him who got crushed to death outside of the walls. My guess is Hazael took over after Naaman said, you know, I got myself a good case of religion, I'm going to go to Israel and become a Jew. That's my guess. I can't prove it, but it's my guess. And the king is also influenced he recognized that God, that Elisha is a powerful guy and that there's a God in Israel, might as well ask whether I'm going to live or not. It's a rather positive thing. Vayela Chazael Ikrato, so Chazael goes. That name, by the way, is distinctive, of course. The name Chazael means one who sees God, or gods, actually. It's hard to say. In this case, El may not be our God, it could be their God. But it's a name of, there's a certain power to the name. All of the wealth of Damascus, a weight of 40 camels. Now, I'd like to stop here in the middle of Pasuk to point out something interesting. Does anybody recognize those words, kol tuv blank biado? He took all the good of somebody in his hand?
Oh, yeah, when Yaakov sent the brothers to Mitzrayim, and he sent them with the good things of the land.
No, I don't think it was kol tuv. I think Kol Tuv was when Avram sent the unnamed Eved, who we think is Eliezer, to go marry Rivka, and it says, Ulakach Kol Tuv Avram Biado. So, of course, how do you take Kol Tuv Biado? Your hand's not big enough. How could he have taken everything that Avram, every good thing Avram had? So Chazal, who are super literal in this case, rather than being drashi, they're super literal, they say he took a shtar, he took a contract saying, how do you hold Kol Tuv Biado? See, here's a case where when you know it's Kol Tuv, once again, it doesn't mean Kol Tuv, I don't think Kol Tuv of Damascus would have fit on 40 camels. Kol Tuv means, you know, a significant wealth. And therefore, when you see Eliezer taking Kol Tuv Biado, you neither have to assume that he had incredibly big hands and he could carry all of Avram's wealth, nor do you have to take Chazal's Midrashic view, which is that he took a shtar. It means he took a significant amount of wealth, or at least Elisha understands it that way. What's that? From the best of.
Representative,
yeah, exactly.
A good sampling of.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Vayomer bincha ben-hadad, your son ben-hadad. How do you like that, talking to Elisha? Your son ben-hadad, melech haram, shlachani elecho, send me to you, leimor, ha'achiyem icholi zeh, am I going to live? Nice, eh?
So he must have been pretty sick, or he thought he
was
pretty
sick. I assume he thought he was going to die, otherwise you wouldn't ask him.
Yeah.
Vayomer Elav, now this pasuk is a little bit tricky, especially because there's a Korean teeth. Vayomer Elav Elisha, Lech, go, Emor say, Lo chayo tichye, vihirani Adonai kimot yamut. So, a little hard to say what's going on.
You're not
going to
live.
Well, the Ketiv is Lo not. Do you see that? It's Lamed Aleph. Does everybody have a Korean teeth there?
No. Here it just has the Lamed Aleph.
But
there's no.
Do you have a little asterisk at the bottom? Can I see that?
I don't think it has anything here, does it?
Yeah.
Oh.
But yeah, it's
it
not well
have
marked.
An asterisk
it's
here
not well marked.
To send you down there.
Yeah,
that's
you,
what.
Exactly right. I say
I
if you want to invest
need,
in a Tanakh, don't invest in this one. If it doesn't, if it doesn't have good signs to direct you. Now, if we read the Kree, then it's very strange. Kilo chayo techiyeh, you will not live, and God has shown me kimot yamut, and then it's just redundant in general. The Kree, and by the way, here the word Kree is a little bit of a misnomer. Why is it a misnomer? Because lo and lo sound exactly the same. You can't really call it a Ketiv and a Kree when lo and lo have no difference whatsoever in pronunciation.
Well, they're different words, though.
Yes.
That's correct,
don't,
but
I would call it. You know, it's
yeah, but there's a different pronunciation.
Yeah.
Banaya
the
Horeb.
Low was Aleph and low was Vav.
So here's a possibility. One possibility is that Aleph and Vav had a different pronunciation, that a Vav had a W sound at the end, so it was low and low. Or maybe like Arabic, which has a Chamsa at the end, like la. If you want to get that sound, you say, if you want to know how Arabs speak, by the way, you know that sound that Arabs have? Not like our ayin, but their aleph. They're aleph with a chamsa. So what you do is you say the word oh, and as you switch from to oh, you can hear your, it's called a glottal stop, because your glottis closes up. It's not the deep ayin and chet of Arabic and Hebrew, but it's a glottal stop. But you also hear it on a Cockney accent when they say ball.
Mm-hmm.
You better get me a ball. So there you get that also. So it could be that there was something
Brooklyn
of
also.
A... What's that?
Yeah.
Does it really?
Brooklyn also
has a got on the word bottle. They swallow it?
Instead of bottle.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I did not know.
Yeah, New Yorkers say
New
bottle.
New Yorkers say bottle.
That's
not
very interesting.
Bottle.
Uh-huh.
You
put a D in it.
Right.
Bottle.
Don't
even...
They
don't
bottle.
Bottle.
Yeah. Rose always used to say...
B-O-D-A-L,
bottle.
She said it was more like the New Yorkers.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that?
That's what I say.
What's that?
Bottle.
Yeah. So that's...
So if you said it that it's
could,
low with above...
It could have a slightly
would
different
be
sound.
Say to him, you're going to live.
Right. So
but
here,
then it changes.
Because you're
going to
die.
You're going to die, which is kind of confusing.
Yeah, the trup supports the lamed vav.
Yeah.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
The trup supports M or low, say
so
to him. And not only that, the logic is... Emor doesn't sound so good. Emor lo, go back to the king and tell him the lamed vav sounds correct. Chayo tichyeh, you're surely going to live. V'hir ani Adonai kimot yamut. But God has shown me that you're surely going to die. Now that's like you're going to win the lotto and you're not going to win the lotto. You know, that's not much of a... Correct. So the question is which way to go. So Radak, I'm not going to do Radak inside, but Radak I think has the best interpretation, which means you are going to live from this sickness, but you're not going to live much longer after that. As if you're talking about sickness, that I have to tell you you're good. But God has shown me that you're also going to die. Vaya.